everybody. Welcome back to Deeper Grooves, Musicians on Music, hosted by Cliff Beach and sponsored by California Soul Music Record Label. Today I get to sit down and chat with amazing vocalist Sarah Nimitz about her new album, 2020, that's out on all streaming platforms now to listen to. I was able to actually go see this live recording being done at the Apogee Studios in Santa Monica, California earlier in the year. I think you're going to enjoy listening to her talk about her work with Postmodern Jukebox, BJ Thomas, Richard Marx, and more. Please help me welcome Sarah.
Hello.
Hello, Sarah. How are you? Super happy and stoked to talk to you about your illustrious career.
No, I'm excited to talk to you too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you must be like one of the hardest working women in show business I've ever seen online. I feel like every day you're posting something quirky and unique to your personal brand and style.
Well, thanks. I mean, I feel probably the same way you feel about it. It's not hard to be hardworking when it's something you really enjoy, you know? So I get up and I'm always really excited every day to create something new. So it's not hard to work hard when you like it.
That's true. And you definitely have a nice, loyal fan base, people that are listening to you on streaming services and supporting you. I wanted to get right into it and talk to you about your live album, 2020, that's out now. And I wanted to understand like how you assembled the team for that record. And you recorded it at Apogee Studios in Santa Monica. I was lucky and fortunate enough to through Alex Nestor, connect to be able to come and see that show live. Yeah. And so it's super impressive is the word I would say. I get invited to a lot of things. It's not every day that, the little hairs stand up and I'm like, I take notice. So it was really, really well done.
Oh, thank you. I'm really glad you could come. That was so much fun. I mean, as you remember, that was right before COVID struck. So I remember even that night we were talking about COVID, but at that point it was just, you know, something that seemed unfortunate, but it was not in this country, or so we thought at that time. And so we had no idea what was coming, but I'm really, really glad that we were able to get it finished, or at least recorded before COVID happened and everything locked down. It was something that I wanted to do for a long time because I've done two full-length records and then a handful of EPs, but all along, I'd been doing a lot of live, and live is what I love so much, just getting to really work a song out and see how people respond to it. So I really wanted to do an album that captured the live experience. So that was kind of how 2020 came together.
Yeah, it was cool, I guess, for people who weren't there. So from my perspective in the audience, you recorded it over two nights, correct?
And
so,
correct.
I mean, you had a crazy amount of team. You had like all these cameras moving in and out. Nobody mentioned about your outfit, how amazing you looked. Your shoes were great. Not that I know a lot about shoes, but it was just like, how are you standing in these for a long period of time? I don't know.
Those kind of shoes you love and oh, I love these. They're so beautiful. But as soon as the show is over and the night's over, you go, okay, let me take these shoes off and become a real human again, stretch my feet.
Oh, yeah. You really had a good way, too, of pulling the audience in. It almost felt like you were bringing us into, like, your living room or, like, your, like, incubation space, your safe space. And we kind of all were in there seeing it happen in real time, live. And hopefully people can hear that through the recording as well. Now, you worked with your long-term partner, guitarist Snuffy Walden. I mean, he has so many accolades with Emmys and I think 26 BMI awards and a bunch of stuff. But how did you kind of form the partnership working with him?
Snuffy's awesome. He's been my mentor for about 11 years now. And we first met when I was about 10. I was doing an acting role, but it also involved some singing on a show called Providence that Snuffy was composing at that time. And, you know, he was so busy during the taping of that episode. He was working on something obscene, like 11 other shows at the same time. So I went into his studio to track the vocal parts for this Providence episode as a kid. And I got to meet him. And, you know, I got his email. And thank goodness it's an AOL email and it hasn't changed. And about about almost 10 years later, I was watching Friday Night Lights, and I just loved that show. And he was the composer on it, and I saw his name, and I went, oh my gosh, that's the same Snuffy, you know, because there's not so many Snuffies out there.
So that's true.
I sent him an email. The email hadn't changed, and we reconnected. You know, I caught him up on what I'd been up to, and he was at a place in his life where mentoring was something that he was really interested in, and it just came together really beautifully. We wrote a lot together, still do, and performed a lot together, still do, and, you know, when COVID's over. And yeah, and he really kind of took me under his metaphorical wing. And that was part of why we wanted to do this record too, because we'd been playing together for so long, and we really just wanted to capture it. And like you said, kind of bring the audience in there and just make it this really comfortable space where we could experiment and kind of have a conversation with the audience too.
Oh yeah. It also felt like it was pretty flawless, at least vocally for me. I was like, wow, her voice is so pristine. And you can tell that you have done so many different things that, you know, to be able to train your voice and be able to do that type of project.
Oh, thanks so much. It was a lot of fun to get to do. And, you know, I was really intentional going into it that, you know, I have nothing against auto-tune or anything like that, but I don't like to use it myself. So I really wanted to try to get a vocal that was as good as I could get it live, because I knew in post when we were producing it, I wasn't going to be able to touch anything up. So I was thinking, oh, I hope there's no crazy notes in this. Otherwise, I'm going to have to live with it.
Yeah, that's what live is. It's a do or die situation. But you've done a lot of live stuff, so this is not your first foray into live.
No, I love live. And I like that aspect of it too, where you're just kind of, you're without a net, you know, if something goes awry, you have to find a way to work with it.
Exactly. So now, I also knew that you were a regular cast member with Postmodern Jukebox, who has had tons of success, and you appeared on a dozen albums with them. They did a PBS television special that you were a part of, and an MTV music video with the group as well. So how was it to work with that team?
That was a lot of fun. And at that time too, I had never left the country. So it was really exciting for me to get to experience a world tour on that level. I remember the first international tour I did with Postmodern Jukebox, I think we played about 36 countries in 4 months. It was just this whirlwind of a tour. And that was such a beautiful experience. And there's so many great musicians in the PMJ group. And I just feel really, really lucky to have gotten to learn a lot with them and get to make some awesome music.
Yeah, you've done other collaborations that are really interesting. I want to know if you could tell me a little bit about how you co-wrote a song with Melissa Manchester, the song Feeling For You on Manchester's album. And she did some work with Kepmo producing a song in there. And that single came out a few years ago, number 2 on the smooth jazz charts. So that's like a different genre. How was it writing that song and co-writing with another person like Melissa?
It was really fun. Melissa is someone whom I had respected since I was a kid. My parents found some old videos of me singing along with her music at about 7 or something. So I have really grown up with her music. So I've always really held her in high esteem. But the process was great. We got together in Snuffy's studio, Melissa and I, and we kind of came into it without any real preconceived notions of what it was going to be. And as I remember for that song, she just started playing this really funky groove on piano. And she was talking about this time she was in, I think she was in New Orleans, and she was just in this bar or this music venue, and this man she didn't know came up to her, and I guess he thought she was pretty hot because he just came up to her and said, oh, I got a feeling for you. And she was like, oh, that's got to be a song. So she brought in feeling for you as a phrase, and we kind of we kind of worked at it from there. It was so much fun. And then Kevmo is someone I just love. He's just such a genius, and it's always fun to get to work with him.
Wow. Yeah, that sounds amazing. And I can imagine just like Kevmo just drips with soul, and his guitar playing is so iconic and amazing.
It really is. He's just one of those guys that is, I hate to use this phrase because it's, oh my gosh, it's become so trite, but he's the real deal, you know? It's just, you hear him play and the way he carries himself, he just drips with soul, like you said. He's just a real musician if I've ever seen one.
Oh yeah, and he's like, he can interweave and fit into so many different situations. I've seen him with his collaboration with Taj Mahal. Bonnie Raitt and other stuff.
Mm-hmm. He's so, and then when he performs live, it's really that same kind of thing that you mentioned of just pulling in the audience. I saw him, well, I've seen him a bunch of times, but I saw him a couple years ago at the Saban Theater, and you know, I don't remember what the size of it is, maybe 1,000, maybe a little more, but it's a pretty big house. But in the audience, you feel like he's just talking to you. You feel like he's just like, all right, here, let me tell you a story. He really draws you in.
I love that. I love that about shows. I mean, that's why we go. We go for an experience that you can't get anywhere else. And I love it when, you know, there's some artists that like, they never play the same thing twice. So it's like, you either saw it and they don't record anything. It's just like, you either saw it and that, you know, you were in for that treat. The people that were there that night at that time to see it.
Yeah. Do you find yourself, are you that way when you perform live? It's always a little different, or do you kind of like to stay to a, unfortunately, I haven't gotten to see you live yet. Maybe after COVID.
Yeah, maybe. But for me, definitely. I don't think I've ever done anything the same way twice. It's like, even, you know, 3 minutes later, recutting a song again, it's like, I've had three previous minutes of experience and now I'm feeling a totally different way. And it comes out in the performance, and especially with the audience. I mean, playing with the audience, trying new things. I mean, I'm not afraid to throw something out there and see what sticks. And so I like that. And all the records that I grew up listening to, or in my like adult music years listening to, I mean, one of my favorite albums of all times is James Brown's Live in Paris from 1971 with a very young Bootsy Collins with his brother Catfish Collins. But it's just like, you know, you hear something like Sex Machine, which the studio record is great, but then you hear this like 9 minute like extended version where they're just, everybody's going like full force and James is screeching. It's just, I like to have those kind of moments where it's just like, wow, that was a moment that we're not going to get again.
Yeah, it makes it extra special, and I think it incentivizes people coming to your show too, because, you know, hey, come to this. It's never going to be the same, you know? You can't just get this from sitting at home and listening to the record.
Exactly. And that's what I definitely felt was coming through at your show. I'm sure the night I saw, which I believe was the second night, was different from the first night, and I'm sure people would have you know, different experiences.
Yeah. I mean, it was different each night. And I love that because, you know, the audience is always different. So, and like you said, you know, 3 minutes later or 24 hours later, you've become a different person, if only in a really small way. So yeah, it's always, I think when you stop changing and growing, that's when things can start getting a little dull.
That's true. So then to go back into some of these other collaborations you've done, I thought this was very interesting. You worked with 5-time Grammy Award winning BJ Thomas. BJ Thomas, for those who are not in the know, I believe he did Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head and other hits. But yeah. What was it like performing on his hit Hooked on a Feeling?
That was so cool. And BJ's really, I really have to thank him for getting me into this crazy career that we both have. I mean, I do like to think that whatever happens, I would have still been a musician, because I think that musician seed is just planted in us, and that's just who we are. But so at four, my first concert I went to when I was four, my parents took me to BJ Thomas's concert in Illinois. I'm from Illinois. And they had played his records in the car. Well, they'd played his CDs in the car, so I wouldn't be bored. And as a kid, I had memorized all his songs. So when I went to this concert at four, I was sitting near the front, just singing along with everything, probably pretty annoying to people sitting around me. But from the stage, BJ saw me singing along with it. And I think he was kind of taken aback by watching a kid singing all of his songs. And he invited me up on the stage. And it was just this incredible experience for me getting to, you know, be on a stage in front of people and singing with someone whose songs I loved. So that kind of lit a fire. And then that was four. And then we reconnected many, many, many years later. And I got to sing with him on his Living Room Sessions album. And we did that same song, Hooked on a Feeling, that I had performed with him at four. So it was a really cool full circle. Yeah, he's just a really incredible musician and just one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. He's so down to earth.
Sounds like you've had just an amazing, from a very early age, some amazing opportunities that just serendipitously came about. I also saw that you did some acting. When you were young, you played, and correct me if I'm wrong, a young Cara Burnett in her stage memoir, Hollywood Arms. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. It was really funny because I'm from Chicago. When I was about seven, I moved to LA for some different acting opportunities. And then when I was about nine, this show for Cara Burnett ended up taking me back to Chicago. So it was like, okay, it's always bringing me back. And the show mounted at the Goodman Theater in Chicago. And then about 6 months later, went to Broadway. And it's just one of my favorite memories in music, getting to live in New York and just getting exposed to a whole different community. I love the theater community so much. So, and of course, working with Carol, she's just a legend. So that was so much fun.
Yeah, the picture of you hugging Carol that I saw is adorable.
Yeah.
When she's it online. And I've always loved her and have her book memoir. Just an amazing talent. And we were lucky to still have her with us.
I know, we really are. And she was so ahead of her time. I mean, to have her own variety show, there are just not as many women doing that when she started. So it's pretty
cool. No, I when you say that, I instantly think of her doing that Gone with the Wind curtain outfit.
Yes, I saw it in the window and I had to have it.
I don't know. I love all of that yesteryear kind of stuff, Lawrence Welk and all the stuff.
Oh, it's just of course.
I love the SNL spoof of that too.
Gosh, it's so great. It's with all the bubble machine and Kristen Wiig with the little hands. I love that so much.
Oh my God. So back to the music. So then you have millions with an M of views of your music on YouTube, which is no small feat for any artist to be able to have, you know, that many people amplified to listen to you. And so you even attracted Ellen DeGeneres and were a featured artist on her show.
Yeah, that was so cool. I remember I was on a spring vacation. I was at my aunt's house in Florida, and I'm someone that I never really take vacations. So the fact that I went on a vacation, this was a big deal for me. So I wasn't really checking my emails for a while. And then I looked at my email after not having checked it for about 2 days. And I saw this email from one of her producers. And I was like, oh my gosh, I wrote back. I'm so sorry. I just saw your email. And then I ended up coming home and getting to be on the show. And she was, you know, I know there's a lot of different talk going around, and but all I can speak to is my experience, and she was so kind to me, and it was really an exciting thing, and her crew was just amazing. The sound engineers working on that and the producers, the crew was really incredible. It was a great experience.
Oh yeah, I mean, that's so it's, you know, likened to like an Oprah. I mean, it has a huge audience. And so my question is, did you get to dance?
I did not get to dance, unfortunately. athlete, which is probably good for America, really. I, you know, we've been through so much. We don't need to watch that.
It's okay. But what did you perform on the show?
I did two songs. Only one aired. The other one just aired later on her website. But I did a cover of a Black Keys song called Tighten Up. I also did Bruno Mars's Talking to the Moon, because these were two videos that Ellen had seen online and she really liked them. So, yeah, so she requested those two. And I was like, you know, I'll sing Happy Birthday standing on my hands. I'd just be happy to be there. So it was nice to get to play those tunes.
That's awesome. I mean, I love the show, and I love artists getting those types of opportunities. I mean, it's such a big honor, and you know you're doing something right to even be able to attract producers to be able to find you and know that you exist. So that's kudos to you and just your sheer.
I wish I could take the credit for it, but there were a couple. I hate using the word fans because it sounds kind of, I don't know, not demeaning, but I just like to call them, like, you know, listeners. So there were a couple of listeners who had sent some music of mine to Ellen, and they had been telling me over the years, I keep sending this to her website, but you know, you never know if someone ends up reading it. So I don't know if it was attributed to that or if she just found it, but you know, whatever the case, it was really cool to get the call.
That's cool. I think it's always great when other people talk about you. It just comes off differently from fans than
it does. Yeah, that way you don't have to say yourself, "Hi, please call me." You know, sounds a little less desperate.
Yeah, I know.
I do cold call for gigs plenty of times. You know, if I find someone whose music I like, I'll just send them an email and say, "Hi, call me, please."
Oh, hey, you know, you gotta do what you gotta do. There's no shame.
Yeah, that's right.
Speaking of gigs, now you also featured in a duet with Richard Marx, who, you know, people know from many great songs, yeah, on his 2012 album and PBS Live television special, A Night Out with Friends. And you sang on his number one adult contemporary hit, Keep Coming Back. Yeah. And you also were on his Christmas album, Santa Claus Is Coming to Town. So how did you feel working with Richard? He's an amazing writer. I know he wrote with Luther Vandross, one of his last big hits, and some other stuff, and a ton of other stuff on his own. But how was that experience?
That experience was great. I'm trying to remember how that came about. That was, you know, how it's always a friend of a friend that leads you to something. And there was a studio that I'd been working with in Santa Monica, and they ended up doing this live stream show where Richard was the guest. So we met, Richard and I met through that. And this was, gosh, this was 8 years ago, I guess. So that's back when live streaming was not, you know, as common as it is now. So it was really cool. We went to the studio. We did Keep Coming Back to You together. And you know, then after that, he invited me to sing the same song on his PBS special, which was awesome because he's from Illinois too. So we got to go back to Illinois and play at the Arcata there. And then, yeah, and then after that, he invited me to sing on the Christmas record. And we did that in Nashville. And I still remember to this day, he's one of these people who is so awe-inspiring to watch. In a studio, he goes in with such a singular idea of what he's trying to accomplish, and the focus is just incredible. I hope to someday be that precise. But he also leaves room for, you know, the magic that happens in the studio. It's pretty incredible to watch him and go, okay, that's why you are as famous as you are. This is definitely not a fluke. This guy is extremely talented.
Yeah, what I find about people of that caliber is they tend to be very consistent, and that's uncanny how someone can like sit down to the piano or to sing in the studio, and they have an idea, they've kind of articulated that idea out to everyone, and then it comes across pretty much exactly like they were thinking. That's not easy to do.
Yeah, that's amazing. And like you said, that ability to just articulate what you have in mind that's something I'm always trying to grow in, because I'll still go into a studio and say, yeah, I'm kind of feeling, you know, like this, or they ask the drummer, what do you think about it? So I'm maybe collaborative to a fault, but it's really incredible to watch people that are so precise like that. Whew.
But everyone's process is different. There really is no right or wrong way. It's just like what works for you and the vibe of the room and the people in it and that kind of thing. And so I've recently gotten to the Song Exploder podcast, kind of understanding how people make their songs and process in the recording studio. And it's a great one just to understand how no two people create the same way.
That's a really beautiful thing to hear. I got to check out that podcast. I keep hearing good things about it. But yeah, I mean, I guess as many different people as there are, there's going to be a lot of different ways of making art, which is pretty cool.
Now, speaking of podcasts, you also were starting to have a podcast that was going through kind of the process of 2020. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's a super new podcast. It's called Sarah Nade, but it's S-A-R-A. And it's full of terrible, cheesy puns. And it basically goes track by track on my new live album, 2020. And it talks about the writing process behind it and what it was like recording it in the studio. And then that's also interspiced with different tour stories. So it's kind of a behind the scenes.
Love it. I love those commentary albums. I wish people did more of them. I'm looking forward to the day where the digital experience can kind of emulate the old school kind of vinyl experience, where you can somehow be able to see like who played on it and who produced it and wrote the songs. I miss that as an audiophile.
I miss that too. I'm so with you. I still love vinyl and listen to vinyl. And I love that experience when you just sit down with the record and you get to take the sleeves out and say, okay, who played drums on this? Oh, here's a picture of them in the studio recording it. It's just that whole experience that you don't get on Spotify.
I think whoever comes up with a cool way of digitally bringing some of that into that experience, I don't know if they're going to have some type of, I don't know, hologram where it looks like a vinyl, but it's digital or something. But whoever figures that out is going to make money. For sure.
That's going to be amazing. Can you imagine you're listening to a James Brown record and all of a sudden this hologram of him is like, this is how I wrote this song.
Yeah. Or it's like Spotify Cube. Like I just throw it on the ground, like a hologram comes out and it's like the whole band. Like
yeah. I like how at least Spotify is starting to, you know, you can click and see at least who produced the song, who wrote it. But I don't want to know more. I want to know who produced it and who played bass on it. And yeah, I want the whole thing.
Yeah, I think I do too. I don't think all people are that way, because it's very like consumer driven, and most consumers just want, I guess, their quick fix, musical drug or whatever. But I think other people do dig deep, and I think there's going to be a way to bridge that gap at some point.
I hope so, but like you're saying, it's probably going to be a little slow coming, because it's we're probably the minority that are interested in that. So it's going to take someone with some really random rich person with that interest who's going to want to put the resources behind it.
Exactly. Someone that's just like, it's probably the guy who bought that one really expensive Wu-Tang album that was just like one copy. It's going to be someone like that.
Yeah. Come on.
So quickly to kind of go through, like, who would you say your musical influences are?
Oh my gosh, I've got a lot. For singers, my big ones are Janis Joplin from a super young age. That was a big one for me. Of course, Aretha Franklin. I mean, I've grown up listening to her. So many singers list her. I really love Dinah Washington. I don't think she gets enough praise. My gosh, she was amazing. Ella is a big one for me. And then as far as writers go, Paul Simon's one of my biggest influences. Tom Waits, Joni Mitchell, of course. Yeah, those are some of my top folks.
Yeah, that's a pretty good mix. And definitely all people that have, you know, many things written about them, how great they are and stuff. Yeah. I just watched recently an Ella Fitzgerald documentary that came out this year.
It was great. Oh, I want to watch it. Where is it? Is it Netflix or Prime?
Well, you know, I watched it because I knew a guy who writes for CNN. He wrote about it. I'll see you later.
Yeah. Wow. I would love to see that.
Yeah, it was really cool. I mean, it's like someone you already respect, but then the way they break down what she was able to do vocally, and it's almost like it shouldn't be possible, and somehow it comes about.
And just the grace and ease with which she did it. I mean, it's like she just breathes notes.
Yeah, they were like, you know, one day she just, I don't know, went on tour with some horn players and she came back and she was scatting. Like, that's wow. What happened. Yeah. But I think there's so many great songwriters and so many great musicians, and that's why we have this type of podcast, to be able to like get to meet new people, because I think we have to continue to add to the lexicon and the musical arsenal. Like, we can't always just sit back and look at the past and be like, it's great. Like, we have to continue to progress and to move forward. And that's why I think it's great that you have such great music out, and I think your music has that sweet spot to be like a boomerang. I can see really young people singing to your music and really old people singing to your music. It's just good music will always prevail no matter what.
I hope that, I think that's the case too. And for me, it's really important to be, you know, to be well-versed in the music history and the lexicon that we come from. But like you said, you can't just get stuck there and just stay in that place. You have to reflect the modern times and hopefully be honest. It's a lie, right? Hopefully be honest to yourself and express what you need to express, but still retain where you've come from. And yeah, I don't know. It's something I'm always hoping to always keep growing and changing. It's like, I'm a huge grammar nerd. I love grammar. And one of my favorite things about writing is, you know, it's really important to learn all of those rules, learn all of the parts of speech, and then go on and just, you know, just break all the rules once you've learned them.
Yes. Well, everyone knows the book to learn all that stuff is Drunken White's Elements of Style.
Oh, yes. The Elements of Style is wonderful. I have my cherished copy of it upstairs in my library. Yes.
I've been working on writing a book. I'm in the final editing process of it. And I realized with working with editors how little of the English language I actually know and understand when it comes to grammar. So I'm glad there are people out there. Oh my gosh,
editors are incredible. They're a super people. It always seems like the more you learn, I don't know if you feel this way, but I always feel like the more I learn about any subject, the more I realize I'm just so deficient in all that I really need to know.
Oh, yeah. I had an older lady that raised me for a time as a kid, and she would always tell me, what you don't know could make a whole nother world. So,
I'm very humbling. But true for everyone.
Yeah. And I really didn't know anything then. So, wow. So we have two rapid fire questions that we start to wrap up that we ask all the guests on here. And it's really to kind of help the next generation. What advice would you give someone starting out now in music?
Ooh, I would advise them to really listen to all the great artists that have come from before, you know, and it, regardless of what genre you're in, you know, if you're in modern jazz, of course, get well steeped in the history. You know, if you're in country, check out the super old stuff. And, you know, if you're in hip hop, of course, dig deep into all the stuff that people sampled, you know, and all the original stuff. But yeah, just listen, you know, whether it's the old stuff or modern people. I think I learn more when I just listen. So that would be my first big thing. Just listen a lot. And then the other thing would be just get out there wherever you can, you know, if it's an open mic or if it's singing on your buddy's album, you know, just constantly put yourself out there, because nothing's going to just come to you. So, you know, even if you don't feel like you're ready, you learn on the gig and grow on the gig.
You definitely do. I remember when I moved out to LA many, many years ago, I was singing at the opening of an envelope. I mean, anything you could do.
Yeah, exactly. And some of the gigs are ridiculous and no one's listening and it's awful, but you still learn.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, some gigs, there was nobody there. I was like, the janitor liked it, you know, as he was mopping.
Yeah, exactly. I remember playing one gig and the only people in the audience were my mom and the bartender. But, you know, they liked it. So I learned something.
Yeah, but see, that's where you start is not where you end up. And now you're so many, many moons past that and still growing. Yeah. And and so exciting. So what's next for you, and where can people find your stuff?
Woo! So what's next? What's immediately next? This might already be out based on when this podcast comes out, but I've got a Christmas song that's coming out in a couple of days. And I know Christmas songs are supposed to be released so much earlier, but a friend and I just came up with this idea, so we started writing it recently. So that's the quickest thing. And then also my podcast, Sarah Nade, is every Tuesday. And I'm working on the next album. So currently I'm just at my home studio, you know, we're all at home, and just writing a lot for my next album, which I'll be releasing hopefully in the summer of next year.
Nice. Well, we definitely look forward to that. But in the meantime, everyone can check out Sarah Nimitz and her latest album, 2020, on all streaming platforms and on her website. And you may be able to get physical copies still. Is that true?
Yeah. Physical copies, vinyl, kazoos, DVDs.
Exactly. All of those things you need. Maybe she'll have a holiday bundle just for you.
Exactly. Yeah.
But Sarah, we had such a blast talking with you and getting to know you more. And I look forward to watching your career as it continues to grow. So for my last question, what do you want your musical legacy to be when it's all said and done?
I would hope to be remembered as someone that just wholeheartedly loved music and people. If I could be remembered as somebody that that made good music and showed some love to other people, I'd be happy.
Well, I think you're definitely well on your way, and I'm sure your big fans would echo that back to you, that you're doing a great job. And so we look forward to hearing more from you in the future. We'll definitely circle back to you once this is out with all the links so people can listen to it. But congratulations on your success. Congratulations on the new album. Again, I had an amazing time seeing it live and hearing it back now on the streaming platforms. And I'll have to get a vinyl myself.
Hey, yes. And congratulations to you on the podcast, on your music, and, you know, just generally on surviving 2020. That's an accomplishment for all of us.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, it's so unexpected. And so from here, I think when you're presented for something else that's unexpected, you'll be better prepared because you've already gone through the worst. I think, you know, Mark Twain says, like, in the beginning of the day, in the morning, you know, eat a frog. When you eat a frog, nothing worse will happen to you the rest of the day. It's kind of like that. It's like after 2020 and this pandemic, there's like nothing...
That's great. First. Yeah, we definitely got our frog on. So now hopefully we're ready for better things.
Oh, we most certainly are. And once people, you know, once we have a vaccine and people can actually get out again, live shows are going to explode. The people that would never go out are going to be like, I have to get out.
There's going to be this pent up, you need to go see music. I can't wait even to just, you know, go to some seedy little music venue and get beer spilled on my shoes and just experience, you know, the dirty bathroom and just experience the whole thing again. I can't wait.
Yes. You walk in that bathroom, you like soak it in. You're like,
soak it in. I'm like, woo, I'm going to get a disease from this that I will not be able to cure, but it's going to be great.
But it will live. That's the main thing. It will live. Well, thank you so much, Sarah. I hope you enjoy the rest of your day, and we'll definitely be talking soon.
All right, eat that frog. Thank you.
I will. Take care. Talk soon. Bye-bye. Thanks so much for listening to Deeper Grooves, Musicians on Music, hosted by Cliff Beach and sponsored by California Soul Music Record Label. I had so much fun chatting with Sarah. She's amazing. Her voice is so pristine. And I think you definitely should go out and check out Sarah Nimitz's new album, 2020, that's out on all streaming platforms. Go check it out now. She also has CDs and vinyl on her website. I'd like to thank our engineer, Tim Hall, in 1192 Studios for mixing and mastering this recording today. If you like what you hear and you want to hear more, you can check us out online at www.californiasoulmusic.com/deepergrooves or anchor.fm/deepergrooves. Until then, take care. We're on all streaming platforms. Check us out. Make sure to subscribe. Talk to you soon. Take care.